AT&T.com/federal.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose, weekday afternoons 3 to 7.
Christy Romero is the acting special inspector general for TARP.
We ended up questioning two-thirds of Venable's bill, which was over $676,000. And we concluded that OFS practices create an unacceptable risk that Treasury and really the American taxpayer is overpaying for legal services.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Cisco is the official sponsor of FederalNewsRadio.com. The Cisco Center at FederalNewsRadio.com is your resource for cloud computing, data center, security, and collaboration strategy and solutions. This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today, for the first time with me, I might add, is Jason Miller, the executive editor of Federal News Radio here at 1500 AM. Jason, welcome to the show.
I can't believe this is my first time. Thank you for having me.
It's only been 5 years, so you'll be back on, 2014, 2015, something.
I'm available. Yeah. Just give me a call.
There you go. Several reasons I wanted you here today, because you've been, number one, covering the IT market for a long time. We're going to get there in a second. But I want to do all things cyber today, because everywhere I go on the web, all of the trade pubs, every time I turn on Federal News Radio, cyber smacking me in the head. It's all over, and it seems not the tsunami word comes to mind, but let's back up a sec. Jason Miller has been in this market exactly how long? Because I've been monitoring you for at least 15 years.
I wish it was that long. No, 1998 was when I first kind of jumped into the market. So I guess I'm pushing about 13 years. Maybe it just feels like 15 for you.
Yeah, I'm an old guy. I lose track time.
Yeah, as a former sports writer who, you with sports writing comes to a point in your life where you have to say, what do I want to do? Do I want to continue to be a sports writer? Or do you find something else? And I found something else, and I fell into covering government contracting for a small publication called Set Aside Alert, and that was a publication that covers
Tom Johnson.
That covers
pub,
small minority-owned business contracting,
and probably went downhill after you left.
Well, I don't know. I'm not a subscriber, so. But I did that for about 2.5 years, and what happened there was the company that owned the newsletter was going to sell it or close it, and I had the opportunity to buy it, and I made the choice not to, and I thought I was gonna be out of a job, so I started applying, and lo and behold, I got lucky and landed with my colleague now Tom Temin at Government Computer News.
Right.
I was there for about 7 years, and then the whole merger between acquisition between FCW, Federal Computer Week, and Government Computer News. So I spent a year with Federal Computer Week, and then I've been here at Federal News Radio for about 3 years. So when you add it all up, about 12, 13 years in the market.
Yeah, and you were really the first major IT acquisition here, right?
Well, Tom, you gotta give Tom credit, 25 years at GCN.
Yeah, but was Tom here before you?
Yes, Tom was here before me.
Okay.
So he, between him and me, and then obviously Chris Dorbeck was here for about 2.5 years, it really gave us a really good place around technology and understanding the issues around technology and acquisition. And so, you know, that was one of the areas that here at Federal News Radio, we really put our flag into and say, this is what something we're going to cover. Now, obviously, with Mike Causey and other people, Amy Morris and Francis Rose, their expertise are in some other areas. So we have flags wide and far, and we cover, as you know, lots of different things.
Lots of stuff. And, I don't even remember what year I was brought over here to be the first show to face the contractor market, period. And I, you know, don't know what the value was on that proposition or not. But you've been covering the IT arena for a while. When did you see a spike in the cyber security, overall IT security arena?
I'd have to go back and say it's always something that was talked about, something that was important. But about 2005, maybe 2004, is really when you started to see a lot of people paying a lot more attention to it. And then I remember a story. It was a special report that the government, we did at Government Computer News, where we really looked in depth at DOD and cybersecurity, because they were really out in front of the rest of the agencies. I mean, everyone always had some kind of antivirus, or they always were aware of the issues. But the issue is, but that story really put cyber, I think, on
the
just
map.
How big of a problem it is, what the issues are. And I think that was the first time DOD really came out and specifically talked about what the issues were and how much they're being attacked. That was done by former colleagues of mine, Patience Waite, who you know quite well,
sure,
and Dawn Only. And that was such a groundbreaking, award-winning piece that I think that really was the beginnings of cybersecurity, and the fact is that the government is having a big problem with it. Before that, I think it was really quiet what was going on. There was an attack, I think, in the early 2000s, late 90s, called Titan Rain. Alan Paller from the SANS Institute will talk a lot about that if you ever get him on.
Yeah.
And that was the first really major cyber attack that came from a nation state or a suspected nation state, China. And I think, but that was so quiet that no one really talked about it.
Was it kept quiet intentionally?
Yeah, I think they were a little embarrassed. They were a little, we're not sure how to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
There was a feeling that it was too sensitive to talk about, because cybersecurity, we can't tell you what systems we're using, because then you'd know and you'd hack into us. And then eventually people kind of came around to say, yeah, they know anyways, or it doesn't really matter because everyone's using the same systems, whether it's a Linux or Microsoft, you know, operating system or Apple. There's only so many. It's not like 50 or 75 different ones. There's 5 or 7. And so I think the feeling was DOD became more comfortable, and then therefore the agencies became more comfortable in talking cybersecurity.
Okay. Now, the issue of computer security in general has been with us probably since that original 15 feet of cable that made the first network. I started monitoring closely the security issues when I was invited to do the marketing for the National Computer Security Association. And they started in 91, 92. Bob Bales, David, now I can't remember David's last name, the techie involved. It'll come to me sometime after the show. You know, it's been with us. We've had the shrink wrap, you know, the Norton antivirus, and then the McAfee, you know, on and on, all of this stuff. But it's been there. But the NCSA thing brought me to a group out at NIST, the Federal Information Systems Security Educators Association, which had its, like, 23rd annual meeting. These are the, you know, the ground-level people and agencies who teach the desktop level security things. Have you had any experience with those?
I think I've gone to a few of their conferences. I think it's the great FISSE, FISSEA, is their acronym. And you know, they're a lot very much in the weeds from a news perspective.
Right.
But it's always helpful as people who you can say, you know, give us some analysis or help us understand what this means. I think that I did an interview with the National Security Agency Chief Information Officer, and he was saying, you know, one of NSA's main goals is information assurance, and it's not a new goal, just gets more attention now. He, you know, basically Lonnie Anderson was saying, well, over the last, you know, 30, 40, 50 years that NSA has been around, IA, information assurance, has been a major component of what they do, major focus area. So I think you're right, the first 15 feet of cable, but also before that, I mean, if you think about protecting code, you know, in World War II, the Enigma machine.
Yeah, right.
You know, we broke the Enigma machine. That helped us win the war. Well, that was information assurance, if you really want to get down to brass tacks.
Right. So, but IA itself is also a relatively new phrase, because 4 or 5 years ago, I'm doing some research for a client who is an IA expert. And, you know, I run the search on LinkedIn, see how many groups are there. There was like 35 groups, and this is 3-4 years ago. Run it now, and there's probably about 150 plus groups on LinkedIn to deal with some aspect of information assurance. But again, it seems like there was a straw somewhere that really broke the camel's back, or, you know, opened the dam, whatever metaphor you want to use.
I think there's a couple things that really kind of started this. One, there's always that back and forth. Is it information assurance? Is it cybersecurity? Is it IT security? And people start parsing it out. Well, right. This means this and that means that. But when you use them all as synonyms, the piece that really broke it was I think a combination of the government finally saying, we're going to be more open about the issues. We're going to start encouraging the public to get involved in cybersecurity, whether it's just securing their own computers because of the idea that your computer, my computer, and then everyone else's computer makes this huge botnet that then can attack the government. So they all of a sudden they realize that the public education piece is important. And then I think the fact is that computers are such the way of life. If you think back to the 90s, did everyone have a desktop computer? No.
No.
You know, but by 2000, they did. Well, and by 2010, they all have these little handheld devices, smartphones. So just the movement of computer, the Moore's theory, if you will, Moore's law, that I think has driven the cyber market and the interest in cybersecurity and the attention that it's getting, not just at the government level, but the contractor level and throughout the public.
And that's where we're going next. My guest today is Jason Miller, executive editor of Federal News Radio. When we come back, we're going to talk more about cybersecurity for contractors, for government policy, the whole nine yards. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It's the only program of its kind in the world. A unique opportunity to help strengthen our country's defense and further your career. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. The only executive MBA degree tailored to developing leaders and managers in the U.S. defense industry. A unique combination of high-caliber executive business education, defense industry-specific knowledge, and hands-on learning designed to accelerate your career in the military, government, and corporate defense sectors, all without the career interruption of a traditional degree. Learn more at som.gmu.edu/defense. That's som.gmu.edu/defense. Do it today, because the last day to apply for the fall semester is July 15th. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University, helping our country's defense, advancing your career.
Nurse means noble. Nurse means selfless. Mothers nurse their children. You nurse someone back to health. If there were ever a group of people more on the give side of the give-take continuum, it would be news to us. I mean, why does one become a nurse? Because working 8 at night to 10 in the morning is so appealing? Because the glamour of day-to-day encounters with a wide variety of bodily fluids is too much to resist? Nurses are nurses because their capacity to care is colossal. Their sympathy, superhuman. Even when you try to act all steely and businesslike, you can't fool us. We still see the love in the tough. We can still hear that gargantuan heart all squishy with compassion thumping away. So while too often you yield the spotlight for just this moment, we're asking all the nurses out there to do what clearly doesn't come natural and take a bow. Kaiser Permanente. May our 45,000 nurses all live long and thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Looking to get more from your technology investment? Look to HP Desktop Computing, powered by Vision Pro technology from AMD. Together, HP and AMD deliver more desktop computers with exceptional visual performance, enhanced energy efficiency, and advanced security features. Available in a range of sleek, space-saving designs. Give everyone in your agency the power to perform at a price that makes it possible. Give them the power of HP and AMD. To find out how, go to hp.com/go/perform.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
How will federal managers improve program performance within the tight budget environment? Find out from Agency Leaders at Excellence in Government, the premier best practices conference for federal managers, May 23rd at the Ronald Reagan Building. Early bird rates are available through April 29th. Don't miss the event that federal managers say best prepares them to excel. Register now at excel.gov.com.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Jason Miller, executive editor of Federal News Radio, and my guest because he knows a lot about what I want to know more about, and that's, you know, this. There is a straw that broke this back, but let's go to the policy side. Mr. Bush's policy was somewhat different than Mr. Obama's policy regarding cyber. So let's go back to the early 2000s and talk about this, because it did have a big role after the fact in 9/11.
I think a couple things that stand out, the differences between the two administrations. I think time, evolution plays a big deal in the sense that when the Bush administration came in, it was right after, right in the middle of the dot-com excitement, the dot-com bust. All these things were happening. And computers, again, going back to our last segment, as we were talking about, became the way of life. Everyone used it. All the processes were being moved online. Terms like e-commerce, e-government, those, if you have e-government, if you have e-commerce, transactions online, Amazon, you know, going to Amazon, going to eBay, whatever.
Yeah, that's... Amazon, where did they start advertising? Radio. Massive radio. And funny commercials, by the way.
So the idea there is that if you're going to do all these transactions online, you need cybersecurity, right? Because if you, as a company, if you Mark Amtower goes to buy something on Amazon or pick your company, and they lose your credit card, or they get it hacked, or they get stolen, you're not going to use that company ever again. And I think the government looked at that and said, we have to have that same but even better higher level of trust from our citizens, and then therefore we have to start really focusing on cyber. So I think that's where the big push came. Now, you know, as you keep saying, the straw that broke the cyber camel's back, I think that, again, it goes back to two things. I'll tell you, I think it goes back to DOD becoming more specific about what they're facing, the number of attacks, the number of threats, the number of pings. And then you had a whole series of viruses and worms and Trojan horses that popped up during the early 2000s that all of a sudden people had to deal with. You had the VA law, data loss, and all of a sudden people said, oh, it's not just about being attacked, but it's data prevention, it's encryption. And then you had also when Bank of America lost records of the federal government, they were on tape. But the point is, that was a cyber problem because it was not encrypted.
Well, people were also wondering then why they were delivering it manually.
Well, that's a different topic.
Issue, yeah.
But so I think that all these pieces came into play to say, okay, we got to start paying more attention to cyber. So what the Bush administration did over their 8 years in office was focus on the policy aspect, focus on the operational side of cyber, and really putting certain pieces in place to get agencies used to, okay, we got to not just bolt on security, as the old expression says, or not just, oh yeah, that security thing, get the guy down the corner to deal with it.
Find that IT guy.
Exactly. And more all about, okay, let's think of it from the beginning. Let's figure out how to make this happen. Is this secure? How secure is this? What's our level of risk? The whole risk mitigation and understanding your risk. All those terms kind of came into play over the last 8 or 9 years. Now what we're seeing is a different shift. It's a shift in many ways that is, okay, we're operationalized in many respects. How do we take it to the next level? What are the steps we need to do? I had a conversation with Howard Schmidt, the White House cyber coordinator, recently. And one of the things that what I asked him was, you don't hear a lot from this administration around cybersecurity, you know, especially internal, agency specific. And that was, it was fascinating what he said about, for instance, we're operationalizing, we are not involved, meaning his office and even OMB to a certain extent, in that hardcore day-to-day what's how we protect our networks. That's something for the Homeland Security Department on the civilian side. That's something on the Defense Department on the .mil side. They're just looking at it from the holistic viewpoint, making sure things are happening.
Okay. Where did the CSO evolve from? That was the Bush era, right?
Well, I think that it's still evolving, but yeah, I think the first time you're seeing it is in the 2000s with the Chief Information Security Officer. Mm-hmm. There has been legislation attempted to establish this and give that CISO a different role. CIOs were not happy with that. One of the things that they said was you have to have the Chief Security Officer report to the Chief Information Officer, otherwise you break this hierarchical, this chain of command. And in some ways, I could probably say it was a chest bumping, a who has bigger, brighter feathers type of argument.
Well, but other ways, yeah.
And I think in other ways, though, it's a fair argument because the CIO in the end is responsible for all the computer systems. And if you have someone who has a separate responsibility for the security of all computer systems, you're kind of drawing a line between the two. And when you go to the Hill or you have a problem and the secretary calls down and says, why did we get hacked? The CIO can't be like, well, talk to this chief security guy. It's not my problem.
It
is your problem. And I think that's part of it. So I think the chief information security officer really realized the need for someone to really focus on this area. Probably, I would say, 2002, 2003 time frame. And then it's really just grown from there.
Mm-hmm. But you know, then we have the CTO. Is there a role there for security? There's just how many stovepipes are we going to create here, and are they going to talk?
Well, I think the argument is it's not really stovepipes you're creating. So under the Obama administration, the chief technology officer, the CTO, has really been focused on what they call innovation. What's the next technology we need to bring in? How can we use technology differently to serve citizens? Security is not their main focus. Do they understand it? Absolutely. Do they
hope so?
Hope so. Do they understand where it fits and how they need it? Absolutely. But I think they're not looking at the short-term security issues. They're looking at long-term technology issues. Now, where it comes in is the CISO, the Chief Information Security Officer, is supposed to answer to the CIO, who's supposed to answer to the secretary. So there's your chain of command. So there is not a silo, as you put it. It's more of you just have expertise and focus expertise.
Okay, so the CISO is reporting to the CIO thus far.
That's the goal. That's okay. Been the plan. Now, there's some legislation, as I said, that's been bandied around a while ago that would change that, but that never got anywhere. So right now, that's my understanding. When I talk to CIOs, the CISOs or the IT security experts report to them.
Okay. Now, I'm not asking for opinions here, but I would like a little historical background. How much of this is predicated on things hitting the fan publicly and the expected congressional reaction to same?
I think any time you have problems that have become very public, mm-hmm. and Congress starts paying attention, that creates that sense of urgency. I think
how much of that urgency, though, is the desire to be in front of that microphone rather than, and I know this is close to opinion, but you know, it seems to me that there's a lot of ambulance chasers, a lot of microphone chasers down there that'll get in front of the microphone, maybe even with good intentions, but they don't really understand the issue.
I would tell you that there's been an increase in staff on the Hill that understand the issue.
Okay.
There's been several people out of college, several people who've been in the area in the community who've gone to Capitol Hill or have gone back and forth between Capitol Hill, and that's what's driving this. As you well know, congressmen, senators, they have their hands in so many different areas that they can't. They only know as much as their staff knows.
They get the 5-minute briefing prior to the
exactly.
next press conference.
And I think that the staff, you're getting really good staffers who understand the issues. Now, does everyone agree on Capitol Hill in terms of what the issues are? No, and I think that's why you get 50 pieces of legislation, and that's why you get the comprehensive cyber bill that Senator Reid, the majority leader in the Senate, had kept talking about getting out there, is still not out there yet, because you have too many pieces that aren't coming together, and too many, I don't know if disagreements is the best word, but you have different opinions and how to come to some resolution over those opinions. For instance, you have the Senator Carper, Senator Lieberman, Senator Collins cyber bill. You have Senator Leahy, Senator Rockefeller, Senator Snow cyber bills. Mm-hmm. well, those are all pretty powerful people with lots of strong opinions and smart people working for them. How do you bring all that together? So I've been told that the Carper-Collins-Lieberman bill and the Rockefeller-Snow bill, they've already worked that out. They've come together, they've worked out the differences, and now they're ready to move forward on that their set of issues. Now, there's a ton of other issues out there. Now, can other people come together and have agreement? That's the big word.
There you go. My guest today is Jason Miller, executive editor of Federal News Radio. When we come back, we are pursuing the cyber issue. Gee, what a surprise. And we're going to be talking a little bit about the GSA initiatives in this arena. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
TRICARE, the military's managed healthcare system, is taking a step forward in letting its beneficiaries see their own health records online. The agency's Blue Button tool is getting an upgrade that now lets users see their lab results, patient history, and diagnoses, as well as their own allergy and medication profiles. TRICARE says they developed the system as a partnership with the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. The system already has more than 250,000 users.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
The ComSatCom report, provided by Hughes.
The U.S. military is increasingly deploying airborne video surveillance applications to aid in a variety of operations, such as natural disaster assessment, homeland defense and protection, as well as military intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance missions. Only satellite networks can provide unconstrained coverage over land and water, enabling critical information to be shared in real time with command and control locations. Whether your mission is to secure our country's borders, operate UAV networks, or provide situational awareness beyond the line of sight, Hughes has the scalable airborne solution to meet your requirements anywhere in the world. Hughes commercial airborne broadband solutions are ideal for both fixed wing and rotary aircraft, are interoperable, can work seamlessly within your current operational network, and fit into your tightly constrained budget.
To learn more about Hughes technologies and contract vehicles, visit today's complete ComSatCom report on federalnewsradio.com or visit Hughes at defense.hughes.com.
The website of the week is the Google Transparency Report. Now, this site includes an interactive map, so you can click on different countries. The Chinese officials consider censorship demands to be state secrets, so we cannot disclose that information at this time. This can show traffic patterns. If a country blocks internet access, you can immediately see this. You can see if any countries are blocking internet traffic. The Google Transparency Report.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Profile America, Monday, May 2nd. One of the most influential motion pictures ever made was released this week 70 years ago, Citizen Kane, directed by Orson Welles, who also played the title role. Welles had already become famous for his legendary 1938 Halloween radio broadcast of War of the Worlds when he was just 23 years old. But his lasting legacy is Citizen Kane, which did not do well financially, although it was nominated for 9 Academy Awards, winning for Best Screenplay. Many critics now consider it the best American film of all time.
When Citizen Kane was first screened, 6 out of 10 Americans went to the movies every week. Today, Americans watch an average of 4.5 movies a year in theaters. Profile America is beginning its 15th year as a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest is Jason Miller, the executive editor of Federal News Radio, former sports reporter, and small business. We're going to get on the small business side in the last segment a little bit, because there's massive play, hopefully, for small businesses there too. But let's talk about recent cyber legislation before we migrate over to GSA. So what's going on?
Well, obviously, there's like 50 bills on the Hill. We talked about Collins, Carper, Lieberman, Rockefeller, Snow, Leahy. There's some in the House. Congressman Langevin from Rhode Island, Congresswoman Clark. So there's a lot out there, and there's probably 35, 40 others that I didn't mention that all deal with cyber in one way or the other. Most recently, the White House actually is sending a proposal around agencies, and I got a chance to take a look at it. This is a draft proposal that was about a 100-page draft legislation that would codify a lot of what DHS does and the way they protect the civilian networks. Now, let's be clear. This is government networks. We aren't talking about the internet at large. We're not talking about .com. We're talking about .gov only. And I want to make sure that's clear, because a lot of people hear DHS and the government and the internet, and they go crazy, and they start getting worried that the government's going to start intruding into their personal lives. This bill does none of that. And in fact, there is no internet kill switch. Let's be clear again. No internet kill switch. And what's interesting is that made a huge deal that there's legislation that the government, that the president could turn off the internet at any time. That's not only silly, it's untrue. So let me back up.
How could it happen? But
well, that's why it's a, there's my opinion for you. It's a little silly. But the legislation that's being floated around, and that I again exclusively got to see a copy of, talked about giving DHS basically oversight over policy, over operations, over implementation, over all civilian agency networks. Now, this would be very similar to the role that the Defense Department plays over all .mil networks. So these are the military's computer networks, the classified and unclassified networks. Right now, the way this works is OMB traditionally had that role. Vivek Kundra, the federal CIO, and before him, Karen Evans, and before him, Mark Foreman, and before him, we could go on and on and on.
Right.
They were the ones that were establishing policy, ensuring that they were meeting the Federal Information Security Management Act, FISMA, or before that, the Government Information Security Act, GISRA. Love the names, of course.
Yeah, love the acronyms.
But they're going to shift a lot of that responsibility over to DHS. Now, currently, OMB did that last July in a memo, and then they're going to take a lot of what's in that memo and make it into law. That's their plan. That is very interesting in several regards, because a memo can always be undone. Laws are harder to get undone. So what's the reason why they're codifying around DHS, and is DHS ready, willing, and able to handle this? They're trying to hire a lot of cyber people. And do you want DHS to have that responsibility? Because under FISMA, OMB has that responsibility, the director of OMB.
Yeah.
Now, it's not all going to be on DHS's shoulders, on only DHS. NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, will play a big role.
They've always had a role.
But their role has always been as an advisor. This will kind of give them a bigger role. And OMB still will have that authority and oversight responsibility, but they're going to pass a lot of it over to DHS.
Okay. Now, two things here. Number one, DHS tried this kind of once before when they hired Amit Uran, 10 years ago?
Feels that way.
Yeah, well, it's 8 years ago. I don't know. It was a while back after he sold his company to Symantec, Riptech. And Amit didn't last very long. I think he just got frustrated with government time frame. He likes to do stuff. The government likes to move slow.
And I think that he also, you know, this was a new concept at that time to a lot of agencies. And, Homeland Security Department, were just created. You know, you're going to come in and tell me what to do? Why don't you get your own self in order before you tell me what to do? I think there was a lot of that pushback.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the Democrats on the Hill were beating up DHS for their own cybersecurity shortfalls, fair or unfair. So when you see that, the perception is DHS can't handle covering their own, why should they be able to oversee our network? I think that mentality has changed to some extent, and I think there's more comfort with DHS's role. I think they've proven themselves in many respects to be qualified. U.S. CERT, the Computer Emergency Readiness Team, that is playing a big role in looking at cyber networks and bringing together information. The Einstein software, the intrusion detection effort that's Einstein 1 across all agencies. Einstein 2 is being implemented, and they're also now testing Einstein 3 at a handful of agencies. So I think DHS has done several things well to restore some confidence or create that confidence that agencies have in that trust. Now, this legislation, though, the question is, I think that has to be answered, is why does this belong in law versus policy? And that's something that the Hill's going to, I'm sure, look into quite a bit if this proposal ever gets there. Remember, this is a draft proposal that's going around the agency, so it's not even been submitted yet to Capitol Hill.
Okay, I'm not going to ask you for an opinion plus or minus on the value of that. But what do you think the likelihood is that a law will pass that plants this fully in DHS scope of business?
It's going to be tough. I think that there's definitely some comprehensive cybersecurity legislation that's going to come. It's going to update FISMA. And I think that's going to be well received in the community because it's going to be one of those pieces of legislation that has been so looked over and so understood and so much input from industry and agencies that people are going to be pretty accepting of it. This piece of legislation on DHS, I think this is planting a seed, and that seed's going to take a little while to germinate. And it may be not this year, but maybe next or maybe in 2 years when you really get a push for DHS. But, and here's my big but. If there is a big major cyber attack, a worm, a virus, something that happens that takes down the government's computers in some way, then maybe you'll see a different push, and maybe that it will give it the impetus to get DHS in charge more, or the vice versa, say, no, we don't want DHS in charge. We want to remain with OMB because they have the ultimate authority.
Okay. Is there any talk at all about the all of the concentration over at Fort Meade on these issues and having them play a more major role?
I think there's a major role on the .mil networks, and I think that both the U.S. Cyber Command, the National Security Agency, and now the Defense Information Systems Agency all coming together is going to be very helpful for DOD in terms of collaboration, testing, standardizing what products, services they use, how they go about cybersecurity. When it comes to the .gov networks, DOD has to, by law, take a big step back and say, we can only help if we're invited. Right. And there's been a memorandum of agreement between NSA and DHS to share information, share people, share threats. So that's happening. But DOD, NSA specifically, U.S. Cyber Command are not going to be overseeing the .gov networks. I think that would not sit well on Capitol Hill. That would not sit well with the public. And I think that DOD doesn't want to do it. They have enough challenges with their own networks.
They got enough of their own. But I mean, you know, go back to NIST for a second. When I started monitoring computer security issues in the early 90s, we didn't even mention NSA, but everybody knew that NSA was working with Dr. Jim Burrows, the computer security lab at NIST on those issues. So.
And I think they're always going to work on those issues because it's a standard issue. It's a standardization issue. It's a testing issue. It's not a policy issue.
Right.
And I think that's the difference.
Yeah. And that's huge. That's really huge. So we're going to take our break right now and come back and talk about the cyber smart buy issues. My guest today is Jason Miller, the executive editor of Federal News Radio. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Have Federal News Radio headlines delivered directly to your inbox. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by Quest Government Services. Identify the federal agency problem. The answer? Too many leaks. Quest Security Solutions will help you pinpoint the cracks in your defenses and keep your critical data from seeping out. For a free risk assessment, visit quest.com/federal. That's quest.com/federal.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Doreen Andrews is the Peace Corps' CIO. She says the agency is figuring out the best way to modernize its business processes.
We are going to take two or three ideas from the agency, and we're going to create demo projects, and about half of our headquarters group, 300 to 500 people, are going to be able to really test out and test drive some automation solutions from the administrative side.
CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
The Indian government has decided not to use U.S. defense contractors as it takes bids for a $10 billion fighter jet project. The U.S.-India Political Action Committee says it's disappointed. Boeing and Lockheed were competing for an order that would have included 125 fighter jets, one of the largest defense deals in the world. Russian and European countries still are engaged in the negotiations. I'm J.J. Green.
There's a saying that lightning never strikes the same place twice. Airport operators know that's not the case, which is why they rely on Airink to provide the most advanced lightning warning systems available. It allows personnel to get to safety, then back out on the tarmac in the shortest amount of time to keep you moving. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
I'm like you. I watch the cherry blossoms bloom in the spring. I live amongst monuments and museums. I enjoy walks on the National Mall. Washington, D.C. is my home. This is where I found my career. I am a civilian employee of the United States Coast Guard. That's right, the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard provides me with great workplace training and excellent federal benefits. It allows me to live my life to the fullest. I have time off to travel and have flexible work hours so I can spend time with my family. Coast Guard gives me access to childcare, health and fitness programs, and first-class health insurance, life insurance, and retirement benefits. This is my career. It's how I serve. Find out more about U.S. Coast Guard positions available in D.C. and across the U.S. at CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. That's CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. The U.S. Coast Guard is an equal opportunity employer.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Temin and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Jason Miller, executive editor of Federal News Radio here at 1500 AM. Jason, before the show, you mentioned that the GSA has a smart buy initiative out there that's going to address this issue. Give us some details.
There's several. So GSA and Smart Buy, which is the Enterprise Software Licensing Program, and they've been working very closely with the DoD version called ESI, Enterprise Software Initiative. And they have, you know, encryption software. They have credit monitoring. So if you have a cyber problem, a cyber loss, a cyber breach, you can buy credit monitoring services. They have, you know, antivirus. They have encryption. They also have something called SAR, Situational Awareness and Incident Response Tier 1. And now my understanding from several different sources in and outside of government is that they're about to send out the RFP, the announcement for SAR, S-A-I-R, Situational Awareness, Incident Response, Tier 2. So again, Tier 2 means just an advanced, more technologies, more capabilities, and that's going to be coming very shortly. And what Smart Buy and enterprise software is a set of pre-negotiated contracts, very similar to the schedule, which is a whole different thing we could always talk about, is what's the difference between Smart Buy and the schedules, but let me digress back to SAR. And the idea here is negotiate terms and conditions with the company, get the lowest price possible, and then open it up as a blanket purchase agreement for any agency to buy from to make it easier to obtain these capabilities, these services. I've been told that was supposed to come out potentially early April, mid-April. I've checked recently. It's not out yet. So we'll continue to check, and we'll obviously have a story when it does.
Right. I mean, always stories. And, you know, Mr. Temin, God bless him, has his regular cybersecurity update. Is it every day?
Well, we do one. Every show does cybersecurity updates at 30 after the hour.
Yeah.
So that's in the morning and the afternoon. And then Tom writes a blog around Federal Security Spotlight, and he's doing that at least weekly, if not more often. So there's always news around cybersecurity, which is hence why we're talking about it.
Yeah. Well, and again, it the reason I did this particular show is it just keeps coming and it keeps coming, and I knew you could make massive sense out of it. So let's migrate on to what this means for the contractor community. It seems to be feeding a fair amount of the M&A activity at this point.
I think the two things that are happening around cyber when it comes to contractors is they see huge opportunities, a lot of money being spent, billions of dollars in cyber. I remember when Karen Evans was the head of e-government and IT, the pseudo federal CIO, like she was actually the real one, but they didn't call it back.
Right.
Call it back then.
Yeah,
I think cyber was like $6 or $7 billion, and now I think it's $10 or $12 billion in terms of the marketplace in government.
Look at what Karen's doing right now.
She's
hitting that cyber
cyber challenge.
Yeah,
and I think so. The market has doubled, and the need is tripled, quadrupled. So I think vendors see that
exponentially.
And I think that the other piece of it is, when you get new technologies, when you get interesting technologies, you want to be able to offer it. And I think big companies, knowing that they have to get into cyber, well, what's the quickest way to get into a market? Well, you buy someone, not develop it organically. And I think that's what's driving this M&A market. There's a lot of instances where you see people getting bought. You see hardware companies buying service companies like HP and EDS, Dell and Perot. And that's not all cyber related, don't get me wrong, but there's a cyber component to it. And then you see companies like ManTech, or you see companies like CGI buying Stanley. Those have a cyber component to them. All cyber? No, of course not.
Mm-mm.
But there's always a cyber component because they're working in the intelligence agency, in DOD, in fields where there is a cyber need. And by buying someone, you're getting that capabilities right away.
Right. You're buying the expertise and the relationships with the agency. As long as you keep that particular shop intact, you probably are going to keep that particular business, because on that side, I don't care how much you market, you can stand out on a street corner with a megaphone. You know, it's the relationship. It really, really is.
And cyber is one of those really key relationships where if you're doing a good job, if you're protecting their networks, that is invaluable. I mean, services, there's other services that are important. Oh, look, I'm web hosting. I'm providing you development. Those are all good things. But those potentially, one could argue, is a dime a dozen. But if you have someone who really understands cyber and is really doing a good job, do you want to take the risk? And again, risk mitigation, risk avoidance to change out your cyber people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the vendors know that if they're in, they're doing a good job, they're in good shape. Now, the opposite is if they're not in, or they're doing the job they could be doing, or at least the agency believes the job they could be doing is better, then that's when it's like there's a little blood in the water and the sharks start circling because they smell there's an opportunity.
Right.
And even the smallest opportunity, a few $1 million, is still a big opportunity because of how it can develop. Because all you need is one cyber attack where the vendor on hand has a small contract, but then all of a sudden they need help right away. Well, that just gives a nice little tick in terms of how much money they're bringing in.
Right. And you know, when we, you know, the other big issue that's emerged over the last couple of years is the cloud thing. But anytime any of these things come, there's always a security component. You know, the issue of collaboration. Everybody wants collaboration tools, but where's the security
I think cloud, and that's one of the big issues surrounding cloud, and that's why there's a couple things happening around cloud computing and cybersecurity. Number one is obviously GSA is running the FedRAMP process. That's having a process by which vendors can get their cloud services certified and credited to meet moderate or low FISMA standards.
Okay.
The second thing they're doing is the idea of risk. You know, there's a cloud computing strategy, talks about cybersecurity, talks about making decisions that are based on risk. And that's why you see a lot of agencies saying, I want a private cloud first, and then I'll look at the public cloud or some kind of hybrid where they're putting, and maybe Google or Microsoft or IBM or HP or whomever, but it's a cordoned off area of the cloud saying this is government only, a .gov cloud, if you will. The other thing that's very interesting about it, we had the big Amazon problem where things got shut down. That was not a cybersecurity issue. That was a cloud dependability issue. But I think that also raises the idea is, okay, well, if that happened to Amazon, what could happen to others? And Vivek Kundra, the federal CIO, spoke just recently, and he said, this whole cloud security risk thing, not the security, but the cloud risk thing, more generally speaking, is a little overhyped. And he goes, listen, there's over 4,500 systems that the government uses every day that are currently what he called outsourced to vendors. So in a sense, already in the cloud. Mm-hmm. The difference is that's more considered a private cloud versus a public cloud, and it's the public cloud that is more challenging.
Okay. What's the play here for the small business that has a niche in any of the cyber areas?
I think the play is pretty straightforward. If you can provide a service, a capability, a technology that nobody else has or nobody else is doing very well, the agencies, CIOs need you. Mm-hmm. And if you have the ability to sell that, meaning help the CIOs, the agencies, the CISOs understand why your technology works and how it works and what difference it can make for them, how it can help them meet their mission better, then that's a big play. The problem I see with small businesses time and again is they have great ideas, but they're unable to complete the deal because, well, you should buy it because I'm small and it's good and it will help you. Well, how will it help me? Well, I just will. I know it. And they can't, the explanation of where that benefit comes in. You know, I talk to CIOs all the time. One of the things they'll tell you is we are looking at innovation. We're looking at technology that's going to make a difference. And we need technology that meets our mission. How does it help us meet our mission? And I think that's the key, not just for small business, but for any business.
Yeah, and I'll go back to the Cyber Maryland Initiative for a minute. One of the reasons I was there, a couple of my friends asked me to come. There's an incubator over there attached to the University of Maryland Baltimore campus in Catonsville. It's right down the road from BWI, which is very convenient for me because it's like a 20-minute spin. But it's also like 20 minutes away from the fort. DOD's got a presence there, so there's a lot of things coming together, and those incubators can help small businesses get on the radar. Northrop Grumman's doing some sponsoring there, et cetera. So,
yeah, I mean, that's the type of thing that people that not only the government needs, but vendors need to understand where the opportunities are and what the needs are. You see a lot of conferences, you see a lot of get to know you sessions about mm-hmm. cyber and where the needs are and how we can kind of bring in those new technologies. And as you hear time and again, small businesses are the ones usually with those new technologies, and that's why big companies like to buy them.
Yeah. Last thoughts?
I think that the last thoughts I'll leave you with is cyber is not going to decrease in any kind of focus. I think it's only going to get bigger because we're all depending on computers, technology more and more. I think that mobile security is going to be the next big thing. DoD is looking at how do we make sure we have secure smartphones, whether they're Droids or iPhones or BlackBerry, you know, BlackBerries from RIM. They're also looking at tablets. So again, the iPads, the Droid, Samsung Droid, the new playbook from RIM, the HP one. How can we make all that secure? How can we make it work? And I think that's going to be the next kind of big area around cyber, because there's a lot of talk, especially from DoD, but across, you know, the FAA is doing this too, is how can we give these tools to our warfighters or employees, and and how do we make sure that they're secure first off, not just how do we give it to them?
There you go. You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest has been Jason Miller, executive editor of Federal News Radio. Jason, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
This is not my day job. If you need to